Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, if you listen to last night's debate, the final debate, if you listen to what Trump was saying about PPE, evidently we're flush with personal protective equipment. We've got more ventilators, we've got more masks, more gowns. He even threw in goggles, which I don't think I've heard him talk about before, but evidently, according to Donald Trump, we've got all we're ever going to need. And as he said, we're supplying the world. Now, here's the thing. I seem to remember all during the first wave of the pandemic, we didn't have enough for everyone to go around. And I got to think that's why Anthony Fauci came out and said, you know, maybe not right now, maybe not wear masks, because we did need to protect those people on the front line. We needed to protect healthcare workers. We needed to protect transit workers, the people who work at the supermarkets. And I don't think we did a great job of it. But I'll tell you, I'm thrilled to hear we've got all we're going to need, because we're heading towards another spike, another round of infections. And look, I'm hoping they are there. But here to share some thoughts on whether he believes we're there or not, I've asked Lance Loggenbaugh to come talking with us. Lance is the president and business agent at ATU Local 1001. Lance, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So let's start with what the president said during the debate. He said that, you know, we've got all this protective gear. We've got goggles now. We've got all this stuff we're sharing with the rest of the world. Is that your experience?
Well, no. We're here at our transit agency, if they have those quantities of masks, they're keeping them locked up in safes somewhere. We've fought from March, like you just mentioned, early in this process. Our agency originally was discouraging people from wearing masks, and maybe that speaks to your point about trying to preserve them. But we had to go out and obtain our own masks. We went and purchased approximately 6,000 masks and went out and distributed them to our members. But as it stands right now, those were really the last large quantity of masks that was ever introduced into our system here. We're still waiting for a reasonable supply to be established. Our folks who have used masks throughout 20 and 30 years of the operation of this agency can't even get masks to do basic jobs like sanding and working on the buses and the transit vehicles. And then, of course, we want the most protective masks for our frontline bus operators and the service and cleaning folks who are exposed to this, potentially to this virus. And they're being given cloth masks and face shields. And we are still waiting for this plethora of the most protective masks, the N95s.
Yeah, what's interesting to me, Lance, and this is one of those things that I've been talking about for years on this program, first from a driver's safety, because we see all these horror stories of drivers being beat up on buses. It's always been curious to me why we don't partition them off. Why they don't have a safe space of their own, you know, one, to stop attacks, but two, that you're not exposed to all of these viruses. Because, you know, look, if you're a bus driver, you're exposed to, you know, thousands of people a day and all of the germs that they're carrying with them outside a pandemic. But especially now in this moment, especially now that you look at this report coming out of New York, where a quarter of the transit employees in New York City were infected, and you had, you know, a bunch of people die from this, you would think we would want to do something more.
Well, it would make sense. You know, I mean, our operators have struggled through that for years. You get on a bus and close the door, and the air starts to circulate, and you're basically in a petri dish that's on wheels. And, you know, the original pushback that I got on masks was that, oh, well, they're not required unless you're around a sick person. And obviously, you're not only around a sick person, you're trapped with a sick person. And like you say, this is not just an ordinary sickness. This is a lethal condition that, so yeah, it makes no sense at all. We've tried to push for the mask enforcement for passengers on the bus, because we can all protect ourselves, but once one person gets on the bus who is not protecting themselves, then they contaminate the entire vehicle, and we're no longer delivering passengers, we're delivering the virus.
Excellent point. Now, the CDC has updated their their information to now say that anyone on planes, on ships, on ferries, on trains, subways, any mode of public transportation should be wearing a mask. Is there a way to enforce that? I mean, you know, because I look at my local grocery store, you know, you walk in, there's a girl sitting there going, you know, would you like a mask? It's mandatory to wear a mask to come into our store. But people just blow by her anyway, and they don't do anything to stop it. Is there a way to enforce this stuff?
Well, you know, that's always complicated, because then you get into civil rights discussions and those sort of things. And then we also have in the transit industry, there's people who learn the key words. And so the key words here in Denver, Colorado are, I have a medical condition. And that the law that, or the process, the what the governor declared makes an exception for someone. Everybody has to wear a mask unless, and so people learn those keywords. But, you know, even without keywords, trying to enforce this, you know, it becomes another police state kind of a concern. And how do you, you know, physically or in other ways enforce a mask policy? But, you know, it comes back to at least establishing and making the effort. There's always going to be a few people who drive faster than they should on the highway, but primarily the laws and the enforcement reduces the amount of folks who do that.
No, it's one of those moments where you go, I wish we didn't have to talk about enforcement. I wish we didn't have to talk about how do you make people practice common sense? How do you make people care about the person sitting next to them or the person driving the bus? This is just one of those things that it infuriates me, because, you know, as I've explained to people in the past, when they mock me for wearing a mask in a certain place, I say, I'm not wearing it for me. I'm wearing it to protect you, because you don't know where I've been.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, these cloth masks, they protect everyone from you. And like you say, you are showing your respect for them by wearing a mask and protecting them. And, you know, a certain amount of basic decency would hopefully have everyone reciprocate. But unfortunately, that's not the case.
Yeah. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Lance Loganbaum. He's the president and business agent at ATU, the Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1001. We heard a lot during the pandemic when things were shut down about how important people were, how important your members are, how important the person working at the grocery store, the people working in hospitals. We assign them essential worker titles. We call them essential heroes. And we do this during times of crisis. We put people on pedestals, and we throw the hero word at them. But when it comes time to actually taking care of them, protecting them, paying them, we don't seem to do a very good job of this. And every time we do this, you know, 9/11 being one of those moments where we threw the hero word out a lot. But when it comes to taking care of them, we really always fall short. And I always ask, you know, who's going to be the next hero to step forward, given our record? And I look at this and I go, ask you, how have we done so far in this? Because, you know, again, we threw that hero word out, but I don't know that we did a really good job in protecting those people and helping them while the rest of us were trying to stay safe.
Well, one of the frustrations for me personally is that while we were making that proclamation of all these heroes, you know, it's like Animal Farm. Some heroes were more heroic than others. And so our folks have not been given the same attention at every level. You know, the need for the masks, obviously, you know, the medical personnel, you can easily say, yeah, they need masks. But a medical personnel, they go into a situation with a little more preparation, a little more ability to control the situation. Bus operator sits there and he's a dartboard waiting for someone with a dart to walk onto his bus. And yet we were unable to get, I reached out to the governor, to transportation folks to try and get a prioritization for our people to be able to get the masks, you know, and that's just on the protection side of it. Then if you look at, okay, if somebody really is a hero, then they're putting their life on the line. Let's recognize that by giving them some compensation in the form of what we're paying them to go out there and risk their life. These folks, you know, they showed up for work day after day. They were all scared. They were all terrified, but they showed up for work. They did their job. They moved people around the city, and they got the title of hero, but that basically was about it. That all I ever saw.
Yeah, we usually throw around platitudes really easily, but when it comes to throwing the pennies around, we don't even do that. So are you talking about some kind of a hazard pay, which I was advocating during the time? Because, look, if you got laid off and you were sitting at home, you got to collect unemployment plus $600. I was saying that if you're showing up to work, working for, you know, minimum wage at the grocery store, we should be kicking you that $600 too to help your family during this time, because not only are you exposing yourself, you're going home and exposing everybody else too.
Yeah, it's not an unreasonable request, and it's also not something that is a new idea. Hazard pay is a well-established thing that we do for people who encounter hazards.
Yeah, I'm fixated on this hero title, because we were throwing it around a lot during those months, and you know, everyone's, oh, you know, thank goodness for our frontline heroes. But here's the problem now. Those people that we were calling frontline heroes, not only did we cheat out of a hazard pay, we're now talking about them being on the chopping block and end up losing their jobs. And I know transit systems across the country who, again, people were, thank goodness you're here because we're getting our frontline people to their jobs. You know, now we're talking about massive layoffs in transit systems across the country, which I think is absolutely the wrong thing to be doing in this moment. We should be expanding transit so we don't have to cram so many people into these buses and trains, so that we can get people back and forth to work. I'd like you to talk a little bit about what you guys are facing.
Well, so, you know, you part of what you're saying, I'll talk about first, and that is that the number of people that we can fit into our modes of transportation. You know, the whole system is changing. We don't want to be the buggy factory admiring all the shiny new automobiles rolling down the street. We want to be able to say, look, here's what we're doing to move ahead. What is our service going to look like? How are we going to provide service? And how are we going to pay for it? Because if a bus can only carry half the people that it's normally, that it's designed to carry right now, then we need more buses. And then that means we need more people. And so there's a new model, and there's of what the transportation will be. And there's a new model for how the transportation will get paid for. Now, when you talk about the loss of jobs, you know, at certain levels, when the dollars and cents leave you no other choice, then, you know, that's where you find yourself. Here in Denver right now, unfortunately, we have virtually a company that has decided that they, likening to declaring bankruptcy and going to the bankruptcy court with hundreds of millions of dollars in a bank account, saying, oh yeah, but you know what, I don't think I really want to spend that right now. Well, they're talking about laying off hundreds of transportation workers while they still have money in the bank, and their need to do that even without money in the bank is based on faulty financial projections and optional, you know, they have good, better, and best options. Right now they're taking good. If they even took better, that would reduce the number of people they have to lay off. There's options. And the biggest concern of this is, not only on the human side, these folks here in Denver, Colorado, have worked 6 days a week for years. They were the backbone of fulfilling the district's mission to provide transportation. And so we ruined their life for 5 and 6 years. And now we've come to the time where, oh, you know, things are a little tough and, you know, it looks like we're just going to have to kick you to the curb. So we're going to ruin their life again. But, you know, it's not just the end of those jobs. It's potentially the end of this current transportation industry. And with that, it's the crippling of the local economic recovery, because without public transportation, there are people who are wanting to get around. There are people who are wanting to ride. But coming back to what our service looks like, if they get on a bus and there's too many people on the bus and the buses don't look like there's anything different, they're going to say, yeah, no, thanks. I'll figure something out. And, you know, when they do figure something else out, they're not coming back just because we go, okay, we're ready for you now. And so it's concerning for me to see the loss of jobs. But to me, it's also potentially a catastrophic effect on our local economy here.
And the last minute we've got, you know, I know there's a lot of people are saying we need to advocate to passage of the HERO Act, which I'm advocating for as well. If you're advising Joe Biden, how do we help transit? How do we help your members? How do we help the communities that your members operate in to stay safe and still provide the services that you guys do?
Pass the HEROES Act, and then let's look at transportation funding, because that has been a ever-decreasing item on the budgets for the last number of years. Fund transportation. You know, that's the number one thing that's going to help our fighting of the climate effects. Fund transportation, pay our heroes.
That sounds sane and rational to me, Lance. I appreciate you taking some time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Rick.
Good stuff, Lance Loganbot. You know, here's the thing. You know, and I go back to this, you know, pass the HEROES Act, absolutely. But we've got to be more proactive in how we protect our workers, not just transit workers, but all workers. And if Trump really is, if he's right, and we have all this PPE, we should be getting it to people now before the next spike happens. Also, we should be taking care of all those people who do show up when the next spike happens, who make sure that we get food and make sure that we get the things that we need while we're trying to protect ourselves. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.